Hello and welcome to 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to sages and gurus, leaders and luminaries from all over the world to dispense their wisdom for your career, business and life in order to make the world a wiser place, lesson by lesson. My name is Robert Hossery and I'm your host for this episode. Today's guest is Joe Templin. Joe is the author of Everyday Excellence, A Guide to Growing, and co-authored Do You Want to Make MDRT or Not?, as well as Choices, Creating a Financial Services Career with Dr. John Stoke. Joe is the co-founder and president of the Intro Machine Incorporated, an organization dedicated to teaching professionals in a variety of fields how to build an introduction-based business, and is currently a board member and vice president of the Autism Society of the Greater Hudson Region. He has spoken across the US and Canada on ethical business development, and he is with us today. Welcome, Joe.
Robert, I've been looking forward to this all week, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate it. I know that you're traveling. I know that it's a bit difficult for you, but thank you for making the time for us today.
No, thank you for letting me share the story. Hopefully help some of your listeners get one or two things they can use to help them out.
That's what we're about. That's what 10 Lessons is all about. Let's start with a very simple question for you, Joe. What would you have told your younger self? With all the knowledge you have now, what would you wish you had someone would have told you when you were younger?
This is actually something that I told my 15-year-old recently because he's essentially my mini-me in a lot of ways. Don't have to carry the entire world's burden. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to make everything right. It's not all your responsibility.
That is really good advice, especially when you think about teenagers and you think about where we were and the pressure society put on us at that
age. It's even worse these days. I don't know how they deal with it. You know, we didn't have social media, so luckily there were no pictures of us being stupid in our teens and early 20s. There was not the hyper attention to every single detail, what you did not live on for decades being captured. And back then, having different paths was okay. The smart kids went to college. If that wasn't what was intended for you, go military, you could go into trades, you know, you could go into arts. So it was all encouraged. Recently, it's been everybody needs to go to college, you need to get these degrees and all that. And it started loosening up a little bit, but there's still these immense pressures to conform. And within the school systems, you can't be flippant. There's no humor allowed anywhere. You can't be relaxed. And if you're doing something that somebody could find mildly offensive, then there's going to be blowback. And so it is restricting their capability to be themselves and explore and discover, which is critical. That's what your teens and 20s are really about, is discovering who you are and what lights your fire so that you can then explore and develop that over time.
Absolutely. And that would be great advice. I wish I had told myself that as well. Look, we can discuss that for a long time, but let's move on to your 10 lessons. And I love them. So thank you for sharing them with us. So let's go to lesson number one. The best laid plans of mice and men mean nothing. I love that.
Or as John Lennon said, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. Because if I had followed the plan that had been laid out for me as the gifted kid, I would have gone, finished college, gotten my PhD by the time I was 21 years old, continued to research for the government on the side, ultimately become a professor and consult, and be completely and totally along that track. And that did not happen. Nor did I get married, have the golden retriever, white picket fence, 2.2 kids, and the minivan.
Why then is that a cliche? Why is it that society pushes us to have our plans, our life plans? I understand business plans. I totally understand that. And the five-year business plan now is pretty much out the window because the world changes that quickly.
Yeah.
But in life, in your career, why is it that planning means nothing?
Because, as you said, things change so much and there are so many variables. If it was just a simple linear equation, go to school, graduate, you know, then you could have a linear path. But that doesn't take into account things like if you have a bad professor who makes it so that you hate intermediate mechanics. I didn't have, but that could be an example. Or, you know, you fall in love with somebody and they are in the military, so you follow them, or they're going on a different path. So there's those sort of things that are out there that disrupt things. One of the big things is that, okay, one of my, actually my biggest goal, the one thing I always wanted to be was a good father. And I had this career path laid out, and then there was the new leadership in the organization, you know, had some significant ethical issues. And there was integrity issues among the leadership. And so when I called them out, you know, I got blown up for it. And so the business that I had spent 15 plus years building that was becoming incredibly successful at that point, I suddenly lost it. And so I went from making an incredibly good income to saying, what am I going to do? And this is in end of 2007. And we all know what happened in 2008. So that completely disrupted things further. At that point, I had my oldest two. My youngest child, or my second child, my youngest one at that point, when he was a couple of months old, we realized that he had been born with a twisted spine. So he was in physical and occupational therapy every single day for the next 6 months. That sort of changed things. And then later on, my youngest was diagnosed with autism and ADHD. At that point, my oldest was diagnosed with Asperger's and OCD. So you need to be able to adopt. The Stoics have a saying or a belief system, amor fati, which means love your fate. You need to accept it. And I don't necessarily love everything that's happened, but I've learned from it. I know I can't change it. So you spend time, you extract what lessons that you can, the pearls of wisdom, as my father calls them, and you be able to move forward. Yeah. So, you know, time is a linear dimension. We can't move back. So we have to make the best of what we can today and going forward.
That is so true. There's a lot of Buddhist philosophy that supports everything you just said. The one thing, when I was a young sales cadet, I used to go to these sales, I belonged to a sales club, and we'd have a breakfast meeting, different salespeople from all different industries. And we used to start the morning off with a thought of the day. And the one thought of the day that popped into my mind when you were talking was, have a plan, but don't fall in love with it.
Right. And more important than having a plan is having a mission or a goal.
Yeah.
Because if you have a mission, then you can adapt what you are doing to still fulfill the mission. If you have the goal, which is actually what I was going to talk about in a little bit with some of the other lessons, if you know that I have to accomplish X, well, this path might not work. It's like you're driving someplace and the road's closed. Well, you're going to take a detour because you still need to end up at that destination. So you need to be flexible in terms of the approach and the methodologies, but don't give up on the ultimate destination.
Absolutely. And isn't that a wonderful metaphor for life? Because we don't see those parallels from physical life to our lives. You know, yes, you're right.
Because we're too close to the situation and we get so emotionally involved. Yeah. Oh, I had my heart set on this and now my heart's broken. And so you're like scrambling and all that. And so that is why the Stoics say amor fati, and being able to have a little bit of Stoic or Zen Buddhism, they're very close in a lot of ways. You just say, okay, I'm still getting over there. So I'm just going to take the different path.
That's exactly right. And that is a powerful, powerful mindset to have if you can develop it. So that is a great lesson. Thank you, Joe. That really is a very strong lesson. Let's move on to lesson number two. A strong enough why overcomes any how. Now, I think I understand it, but I'd like you to explain it.
So I love to use the example of my friend, Tommy the firefighter. Okay. And Tommy the firefighter trained new firefighters in a lot of ways. And so one of the early trainings they would do with them is, there's this building. It is on fire. There are children inside that you need to save. What do you do? Hey, I'm going to go through the door. Oh, door's steel and barricade. You can't get it. I'm going to go through the window. Steel bars over it. Can't do that. Okay. I'm going to go through the wall. It's reinforced. Okay. And he would just keep playing these scenarios and he'd keep reminding him, there are kids inside. And so, like, ultimately, like, the solution is take the truck and drive it into the wall to open up so you can get inside was one of the solutions. Other people came up with other ones. But if what you are trying to accomplish is more important than anything else in your world, you will find a way.
Yeah.
So my friends who are special needs parents, take care of that kid. That is the most important thing in their entire universe. You know, be able to run your business so that you can take care of your kid. If I put a gun to somebody's head and said, you need to come up with $50,000 within 24 hours or else I'm going to shoot your child. Guess what? They're coming up with that money. So we need to not care about everything at that level because it will burn you out. But if there are some things that are that important, where learning is as important as breathing, as one of the old philosophers said when he was holding a student underwater, if at what you're trying to accomplish, it is literally an obsession, a grand obsession in a lot of ways, then you will be successful because you will figure it out somehow, because nothing will stand between you. And this is why, you know, 100-pound woman can pick a car off her bait.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very important point. You know, if your why, if your purpose is there, then you will find a way to do it. You're absolutely right. And I've experienced it. I'm sure many of our listeners have experienced it. I'm sure you've experienced it. And those who haven't experienced it, just think about what Joe just said, because it's true. And it does work. If you give it some thought, you'll see that you have actually experienced it in one way or another throughout your life sometime. I have no doubt. That's a fantastic lesson, a very powerful one too. Actually, they're all powerful lessons. Let's go to lesson number three, because I actually like this. I like all of them, but I like this because it speaks to me and it speaks to something that I've experienced in my life. Lesson number three, sacrifice of myself to myself. Talk to me about that, Joe.
So this actually comes from a very bad 1980s hair metal song. It's the band Manowar. They write lots of songs about Norse mythology. And this is about Odin when he hung on the tree of life for 9 days and tore out his own eye for one drink of the water of wisdom. And so he made a sacrifice of himself, but to himself. So when you go to the gym every single day, and you're sweating and it's painful and you hate it and you're pushing through it, what are you doing? You're making a current sacrifice. You're experiencing temporary pain and you're allocating time. What for? To yourself, to unlock the better version of you, to have more physical strength, to have better emotional control, which is one of the things that heavy working out does, to extend your life, because that hour that you spend in the gym is going to add 3 hours, 5 hours a week to your life, ultimately, and not just longevity, but better life style. Yeah. So studying for your exams instead of playing video games, which is a lot more fun, studying is a sacrifice, but it's a sacrifice to future you to get that better job, to get that promotion, to get all these better things. You know, so you make sacrifices of yourself to yourself for that better version, better vision of who you potentially be. And what we need to do is work on unlocking that, because as Michelangelo saw within the block of marble, he saw the David in there and he just removed the marble to get to it. We have excellence within us of some capacity. It is our job to unlock that. How do you unlock that? With consistent effort focused on certain things and being able to say, I enjoy this, but this is better. I love my donuts. Example that I talk about all the time. I absolutely love my donuts. But, you know, I eat them once a month on my cheat day so that I can have the physical power and be able to train martial arts and running and all these other things. Also, the discipline and willpower to say, I really want a donut. I'm not going to have one, because that willpower is a skill that then bleeds over into other areas, because the discipline to not eat the donut is the same discipline that helps me make my bed, even though I hate making my bed every morning. It's the same discipline that lets me pick up the phone to call that potential client that I don't really want to call, but I'm going to. And that then gets me something better on the far side of purposely choosing that pain.
You are spot on. And I think what you just said, choosing, everything we do is a choice, people. Everything we do is our choice.
That's why that one book that I wrote with Dr. John Stolk, we decided to call it Choices, Creating a Financial Services Career, because we are a product of our choices.
Yes.
And so with building a financial services career, everything is a choice. Are you going to work on getting your designations or not? Are you going to pick up the phone and be uncomfortable or not? Are you going to ask for introductions to potential clients? Or are you going to take the easy road? Are you going to do the hard things that make you better? Or are you going to choose convenience, which is diametrically opposed to excellence?
Yeah. These are things that, as a young sales cadet, I didn't learn that, but I learned techniques. And some of the techniques I totally were totally against my values. And I chose not to use those. And I chose to form relationships. And I was successful. And it taught me that the choices for my life are my choices. Right or wrong is irrelevant. It's my choice. And if it's a wrong choice, then guess what? I've learned from it and I move.
I own it. And that goes back to lesson one, where you learn to accept it. You learn to extract the insights from it. And so next time you make a different mistake.
Yep. So sacrificing of yourself to yourself is a great way of putting it. I've never heard it put that way before, but it makes a lot of sense. And again, when I host these episodes, a lot of the listeners hear me say this over and over again, but I really mean it. If you don't understand it, rewind and listen to it again, because if you know, the more you listen to it, the more it will hit home. I think it's a brilliant lesson. So thank you for sharing that with us. Let's go on to lesson number four, because this is, to me, again, a well, duh moment. Lesson number four, harder is better. Okay, we know this, but tell us what you think about that.
Because if you choose to do hard things when you don't have to, when the world forces you to do hard things, you can do it. So I believe it was Seneca, the Stoic, said, every once in a while, eat the meanest of foods, be cold on purpose, skip a meal, wear bad clothes so that you appreciate the good ones, so that you can say, is this the worst thing that happens? So, I have to cut back and live on peanut butter and jelly for a week. And because we're waiting for these deals to close and, things are tight. Oh, well, so be it. I can do that. If you choose to go run in the rain when, your feet get all gross and sloppy, I hate it, and you're squishy, it's the worst. And for the first mile, I'm like, why the hell am I doing this? And the second mile, this sucks. And the third mile, especially when it's windy and cold, you're like, this is horrible. I'm an idiot for doing this. And then you're almost home. You're like, I'm almost there. And you get inside and you take off all the wet stuff and you take that warm shower and you're like, last time I did this, I literally said, I deposited. I made deposit it into the resilience account so that when something bad does happen, I can deal with it. When I have a bad streak in business or when somebody close to you is sick, you then have the reserves to be able to do this. I mean, iron becomes a sword by hammering it and getting rid of all the impurities. Okay. If you're not choosing to hammer it, guess what? You're going to be weak and break when you get hammered. So you can either choose to hammer on yourself by doing the hard things, or you can let the world hammer you and break you.
What a wonderful metaphor that is.
Thank you for the opportunity, Robert.
Wonderful metaphor. This is brilliant because you're spot on. You're absolutely right. Appreciation. I think we don't appreciate appreciation as much as we should.
Dude, that is something that is really critical. I've actually been thinking about this recently because I had two separate people who I care very dearly for tell me in the past couple of days, I appreciate you. And words of affirmation are not one of my primary love languages, if you're familiar with Chaplin's love languages. But just to be told that's like, wow, okay, yes. And having an attitude of gratitude, it made me pause and look around and say, who do I really appreciate that I haven't told that to recently? And because of that, I reached out to a couple of people, some out of the blue, actually, and just told them. So being appreciated, understanding that it's important is one of those things. And it's so little. I mean, it took me 30 seconds to send each one of those texts.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true, people. Appreciation is underrated and it adds so much, not only to your life, but to the lives of the people that you appreciate. I have done that myself. I just can't describe the feeling, but it also has made me stronger and made me able to appreciate the good things. But back to your lesson, all these things that are hard for us, if we can overcome them, we can then see that, you know what? It wasn't that bad. We catastrophize all of these things in our mind. Oh, it's raining. I'm not going to go running. What's it going to do? What's it going to do to you? I mean, I don't run, by the way.
You're not made out of sugar. You're not going to melt. So Ken Jeong has one of the best lines, and it's one of my favorite gifs to use also, from The Hangover. But did you die?
Beautiful.
And so, you know, I use that multiple times a week, not just sending it to bust on my friends, but I send it to my kids. And I'd be like, my kids is like, you know, there was this issue, you know, we ran out of milk for breakfast. I'm like, did you die? And he's like, no, I sucked it up and got through it. It's like, beautiful.
Yeah.
So my mom, the nun, taught them that phrase. She used to tell it to me when I was a kid, suck it up. Okay. It's not going to kill you to not have the newest gee whiz gizmo. It's not going to kill you to have this sort of thing. You know what? You can suck anything up for a little period of time, whether it's doing a 2-minute plank to help improve your body, or it's occasionally staying late in the office to get the job done, or, you know, helping that little old lady. It's not going to kill you. Suck it up. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And what a wonderful lesson that is. Lesson number 5 is, I think, probably my favorite. Having seen all your lessons, it's one of my favorites because I love all of them. But lesson number 5, see it, then be it. I mean, that is just the best way of putting the term visualization into a sentence. Love it. Love it.
And part of it is about changing your identity in a lot of ways. So developing the identity of I am a runner. So a lot of people, you know, are like, I want to start running. I want to do a 10K this year or whatever, but I'm not a runner. And they have that identity of not a runner. So they need to change that identity. They need to see themselves crossing that finish line. They need to feel it. David Goggins talked about this with SEAL training, of that couple of moments of just pure bliss of wearing dress whites, walking across the stage. And he visualized that through the entire Hell Week process to help carry him through. I did it with trying to win a sales contest with my company, you know, when I first started with a year-long thing. It was based on your production. I was competing against people in all the bigger markets. I'm like, I'm going to be top 10. I'm going to be on stage. This is what it feels like to be on stage. I was feeling it every single day. I was going through my numbers. I was making changes. I was pushing myself. I was doing the hard things that I didn't want to. I was making the sacrifices of myself to myself. And ultimately, I ended up being top 10. And the people that I spoke with this morning are from that company. And so I told them this very story. And they're like, wow. Okay. And so it translates into martial arts. First major tournament that I won, I trained for it for 6 months, 2-3 hours a day, every single day, in addition to running my business and everything else. But every morning and every night, as I was coming out of sleep and going into sleep, your body's producing theta waves. That's when you can program your mind the best. Literally, the software is the most hackable at that point. So going to bed, going to sleep, and waking up, I visualized winning that tournament with a specific technique, an instant hook kick to the guy's head. And when it came down to it, last fight, last point, I did exactly what I had envisioned over and over and over again. So Dr. Julie Bell is a performance psychologist. Dr. Pete Grider talked about this. Seeing yourself doing the action over and over again, your body cannot tell the difference. Your brain cannot tell the difference from the virtual reality going on in your head or the actual experience. So they have found that athletes actually improve more with visualization than actual physical practice.
That's very interesting. And I suppose you can convert that into anything.
Yeah. Like, you want to fit into that dress for your reunion, hang the dress up and see it every single day and see yourself wearing it. Touch it so that you can feel and get that haptic feedback. And what's going to happen is, seeing it that much and visualizing it, it's going to influence all your decisions in terms of what you're eating, how much you're working out, everything else, so that you can achieve that. This can happen with business goals. This can happen with relationships. This can happen in almost any area of our life. So see it, then be it.
What a wonderful way to put it. Love it. I absolutely love it. So we'll take a quick break. We'd like to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to consume 10 lessons learned, books, and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in the one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. With Audible, you'll find your favorite lessons while you're at home or on the go, and the link will be in the show notes. Our guest today is Joe Templin, co-founder, author, speaker, martial arts expert, here with us sharing his 10 lessons. So, Joe, let's go to lesson number 6.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, please.
Move around? I love Audible. I use Audible to get extra learning in all the time. While I'm running, while I'm training, while I'm driving my vehicle places, I use Audible to double dip on time and make me better.
You know what? I probably wouldn't have kept this in, but I'm going to. This is totally unscripted. I just want the audience to know, totally unscripted. Joe didn't even know.
I want your sponsor to know that. They should pay you extra.
Well, they're an affiliate partner. So, you know, people, if you want to support this show, go to Audible and get your free 30-day trial. But thank you, Joe. And what a great endorsement. All right. Lesson number 6. Bad day? Help someone. Couldn't agree more. But tell us your experience on this.
So this is something that was taught to me by my mom, the nun. Yes, my mom was a nun, then she had 6 kids. My mom also taught us to shoot and to distill alcohol and to hotwire cars. So lots of lessons from my mom, but this is the best lesson of them all. So it seemed like there was constantly an extra kid in my house. And there were already 6 kids, so having an extra one, not a big deal. You know, one of my brother's friends would be over, because something was going on at their house, or my kid sister's friend would be there, or what have you. And we didn't grow up with a ton of financial resources. We lived out in the country, so we had the farm, we had land, we had love of learning. There was always emotional support. And my mom taught me that if your life is not going well, remember, there's somebody else whose life is much worse. Okay? You're breathing, you're relatively healthy, you got a roof over your head, you got food, even if you might not like it. You know, you are better than 98% of people who have ever lived on this earth. So if you're having a bad day, the best thing to do is to take from an area of your abundance and help somebody else. And it might not be financial, because there have been times when literally I couldn't scrape together 2 dimes, but I was able to help other people. I could volunteer my time to teach a class. I could go on in and tutor in the high school. I could mentor kids in college to be able to assist them. I could carry the groceries for somebody. You can just hold the door for somebody. Okay, you're having a bad day. You hold the door for somebody and they say thank you. Well, all of a sudden, you feel a little bit better. I'm down in the southern United States right now, and everybody is like, yes, sir, no, ma'am, all that. And just that little thing perks you up and makes you better. And there are so many biological components to this. One of the big ones is that when you help somebody, they will probably smile. When they smile, it activates the mirror neurons in your head. So you want to smile. When you smile, your cortisol levels drop. That's the stress hormone. So suddenly you're less stressed out because you took the minute or 5 minutes or whatever to make somebody else's life better. You've relieved the burden from them. And when we lighten somebody else's burden, guess what? Our burden's lightened too. So doing this on a regular basis, even micro good deeds, helping other people's out is going to improve you. As one of the things that we teach our Cub Scouts is do a good turn every day. Always been that way. Do a good turn daily, help somebody else out. And if you're doing this and you've programmed your reticular activation system to look for ways to help others, you know, you almost do it without thinking. So when you're having a really bad day and you're like, oh, geez, you know, car engine blew up, spilled coffee all over me, you know, cat like decided to poop on my bed, whatever it is, that's probably a whole bunch of things that have added up. Doing a good deed, helping somebody else out, suddenly shifts the entire balance.
Yeah, doesn't adjust. It's very powerful to do that. And if you program that as just part of your personality, part of what you do, then the rewards are just amazing. And it took me a long time to learn that, Joe. A long time. So I'm grateful that you're sharing that with us now.
Sometimes our life becomes so hectic, we forget it.
Yeah, we
do. That, you know, what I'm talking about here, these 10 lessons, I'd say almost all of them, everybody's heard them before. But you know what? It's like just like showering. You still need to do it. You get the dust and grime of the world off you by showering. You know, dust off your brain by hearing these things again. And maybe you can take some action on them.
Correct. And you know, yes, maybe they've heard these lessons before, but they have never heard your anecdotes before. They've never heard your perspective on these lessons before. And that's what's unique about our show.
One of the things I was talking with this agency this morning that I went to speak, and I'm telling them a lot of the same things that they hear all the time from their management. But we all tune out mom and dad eventually. Okay. But when somebody else says the same thing, especially when it's, you know, the fun uncle, the funcle, which I get to be, comes on in with some of his crazy stories, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't believe that. And they get all excited about it because they're hearing something in a new way.
Yes, absolutely correct. All right. Well, speaking of the fun uncle, lesson number 7, truth is told through jokes. Well, I agree with that, but the jokes I heard when I was young can't be told anymore because they were just awful.
So one of the biggest things is we have to realize that we need to laugh at ourselves the most, because the more you can laugh at yourself, it shows that you have a control and an understanding of yourself and things don't get too crazy. So like, you know, the example of spilling coffee all over yourself. So did that. And like, so one arm was all brown and everything. So I'm like, oh, you know, which do you like better, the brown shirt or the white shirt? And people realize, okay, this person has resilience to be able to deal with unexpected things. And you need that, going back to the first lesson, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. So if you can show that you can adapt, that you can laugh at yourself, because you know what? I make grave mistakes all the time, to quote Thor. So I do stupid things. Hopefully it's different stupid things. And I make mistakes and I laugh at myself. And people need to do that. But also sometimes you need to be pithy to get your point across. So an example, when I was in graduate school and my best friend was working on his PhD and he was working on it for years, writing his thesis, and he ended up putting on a bunch of weight. And so this is when I was really heavily into martial arts and everything. And so I'm coming back from my martial arts class and he makes a comment about being in shape. I look right at him. I'm like, yeah, Brown's a good shape. And he's like, you did not just. I look right at him and laughed. I'm like, yes, I did. And so you need to have the right relationship with somebody to say that. But he went and started changing his eating habits and getting out and exercising more. And 2 weeks later, he's like, see, I'm not so round anymore. And, you know, he went and made those changes, which he needed to do. So it takes a good friend to tell you the truth. Yeah, it takes a better friend to make a joke out of it so that you actually understand and make changes that you need to.
It also takes a strong person to accept those comments.
Now, well, that's one of the major things is people don't want criticism, because criticism points out our flaws and makes us feel bad about ourselves. And so people don't want to feel bad. This is going back to do the hard things. You know, oh, I need to fix this. I need to get better. I did not lose because the world is conspiring against me or because somebody hates me or there's a nefarious plan. I did not do it because I failed. Okay, So what do I need to do so I don't fail? Learn to hate losing so much that you do what it takes to win. Not cheating, but the extra hours and the studying and the practice and the changing your mindset and learning new things and pushing yourself. Okay, so you learn to win by losing. Failure is feedback is one of my sayings, which is not one of my 10 lessons, but you go and you discover what you need to do to improve, to get better. And a real friend, there's an old Irish saying that the best mirror in the world is a good friend. And all my military buddies, you know, the only humor that we have is dark.
The one thing that I was going to ask you is, Aussies are very self-deprecating. We really don't take anything seriously, except the things that
we take
seriously.
Because you're all founded by Irish criminals that got shipped down there.
Probably. But we can be self-deprecating. We can joke. We can do that. I have found, because I lived in the States for 5 years, and I've found that Americans generally, and I'm generalizing here, do not.
No. Not anymore. I mean, whatever happened to the days of Blazing Saddles where everything was on the table to be made fun of?
Yeah.
Things have become too PC in that way because, we don't want to offend people. No, you should offend people because there's truth in it and they can learn from that and they either get better. But when you have a victim mentality, you're not going to get better. It just hurts me. So I need my safe space. So I'm okay. And safe spaces are actually the worst thing that you can have because you're choosing to not do the hard things. You're choosing to purposely avoid them. So you get weaker and weaker mentally and physically and emotionally. And that's the issue. So confront your fears, confront the things that, you know, you can't do well, confront the things that you're doing poorly, face them and get better.
Now, I just want to just confirm, we're not saying that safe spaces and PC are bad things when used correctly.
Yeah, it's when it goes to an extreme. Just like I'm not saying, hey, you know what? Sleep on a bed of nails and drink, you know, like only one glass of water a day and do 23-hour fast and all that. No, that's insane.
Yeah.
There's a point in the middle and there's actually a range within the middle. But unfortunately, when we're trying to protect everybody, I mean, they've gotten rid of merry-go-rounds and monkey bars because kids get hurt. You know what? Kids are supposed to get hurt. That's a feedback mechanism. Okay, you're going to learn that way. They put warning labels on everything. And the more warning labels you put on things, people, you know, need more warning labels because they don't realize, that's going to hurt. So when you get hurt on little bases, you learn not to do the big things that can kill you. If you get confronted with little things, then you build up a resistance to be able to attack the big things. So it's making things too soft, making things too safe, making things too protective. Makes it so that you can't deal with it.
Yeah. I just wanted to make that clarification so that our audience understands what you're saying.
Yeah, so they all get the pitchforks and come after me.
So let's move to lesson number 8. Be a kid. I think that's a wonderful lesson. I think we should all be a little childish and let the child out in us. But it doesn't happen, Joe.
No, because it gets crushed out and we have all these responsibilities. And you have to be like within the lines at work and, you know, some of that PC stuff we talked about, because if you get close to the line, then you're going to offend somebody. And when you have 100,000 people in your organization, somebody's going to be offended by everything. So, you know, the organizations need to learn, okay, look, don't get offended by that. Okay. It's not that bad. You know, you need to suck it up a little bit, but being able to enjoy, to have jokes. So like one of the things that I used to do, and you might get a kick out of this, when I was in sales is everybody sends Christmas. And so there's like 500 Christmas cards on people's mantles. So yours gets lost. So I started sending other sorts of cards. I'd send a Thanksgiving card. I would send a Halloween card because I love Halloween. Being Irish, I'd send St. Patrick's Days. I'd send 4th of July cards for Independence Day. And when they opened the card, there was glitter. So there was like...
My God, they must have hated you. They must have hated you.
Absolutely. I would get calls like 3 months after. I found glitter on my armpit template. And so I did it for 2.5 years. That there was always, my clients would call me and say, I'm opening your card over the garbage. So I did that, but then I stopped sending glitter. I did not send glitter in 2 sets of cards. And my clients were calling me, where's my glitter? Okay, so it's a stupid little thing, sending a Halloween card instead of sending just the traditional cards
at
different times. And, you know, having like jack-o'-lantern glitter in it or bat glitter or stuff like that. It's, they get a laugh out of there. But one of the things is that you get people to laugh, they're more receptive. Chris Voss, the former head of hostage negotiation for the FBI, his book, Never Split the Difference, and some of his talks, if you get somebody to laugh, they are 35% more receptive for about the next 5 to 15 minutes. And the more you can get somebody to laugh, if you look at using the triune brain model, the middle part of the brain, which is all emotion, relationship, and memory, you really light that up when you get humor going and they're laughing and, you know, it decreases the cortisol, increases the dopamine and serotonin. So biochemically, they're all like more primed to bond with you. It releases oxytocin too. And then what happens when that is done is they embed better memories of you. And if we look at the trust factor, one of the components of that long range is association. And so they have great memories of laughing with you, and that's going to tinge their view of you in everything. And so they're more likely to do business with you. They're more likely to refer you. They reach out to you on certain things because they just enjoy being in your presence, because you can either be with somebody who's a grumpy Gus all the time or somebody who, even though they take their business very seriously, don't take themselves seriously. So my clients used to say, I didn't realize this was going to be one, a therapy session, and two, a comedy show. And they came back over and over again and they referred me to other people. They're like, Emplin's a goofball, but he really knows his stuff. You got to talk to him.
This is true. This is so true. And there is that fine line. So, you know, people, what Joe is talking about is demonstrably true. Joe's experienced it and he shared that with us. I've experienced it. You talk to any professional who does this, they've experienced it, but there is a fine line. We're not saying here, be an idiot. We're saying, let the child out in you. Again, when it's appropriate.
No.
So I love it. All right, let's talk about lesson number 9. Speak love and in their language. What do you mean by that?
So this is really about the platinum rule. The golden rule is treat others how you'd want to be treated. The platinum rule is treat others the way they want to be treated. And I was actually having a conversation with this agency this morning. We got into a conversation around love languages. And so like my love language primarily is physical touch. But my second, it dairy, is quality time. And so my significant other, her number one is gifts. And her second, though, is words of appreciation. And so I need to show that I care for her, not in my manner, but in the way that she appreciates most. So she'll show up at her office and there is like a little note every couple of days where I just take an index card, one of these, I fold it up and I turn it into a card. And she's an artist and I barely draw like a 5-year-old. So she appreciates it. She finds it funny. She gets a laugh and she gets that little thing of Joe is thinking about me.
Yeah.
And this translates into a lot of other areas. So I had a lot of engineers as clients. I went to an engineering school. I went to Rensselaer Polytechnic. Our mascot is the engineers. So we were all nerds there. And so I had a ton of clients in that space. And one of the things that I did with all my clients before going into presentation mode with them would be, how do you process information? And they'd be like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, my engineered clients, you know, people like me, they love spreadsheets. They want to see every gory detail. They want to see the formulas. They want to see how I derived every single thing. If I did that with a normal human being, your eyes would roll into the back of your head. And anybody who is an engineer
laughs
because they're like, yeah, that's us. And everyone who's not an engineer but knows an engineer
laughs
because they're like, yeah, that's what would happen. So I had a lot of executive clients. So I would use an executive summary. Or my military clients, I'd use bluff format, bottom line, upfront format. With my clients who were artists, I'd use a lot of colors. Green is good, red is bad. And so I was conveying the information in a way that they were most receptive to. Because if you're not conveying the information in a way that they can receive, it's like you're speaking Greek to somebody who only speaks French. So people who like use lots of numbers and all that to an artist, they're just going to not comprehend because you're literally speaking a different language. So speak the love language of those individuals in the way that they are receptive to, and do it often. Okay. One of the things is my parents taught me when I get off the phone with my dad, my mom's been gone multiple years, or any of my relatives, or anybody I really care about, I tell them I love them. I don't care if they think it's weird or anything, because I did not do that with my godfather when he 25 plus years ago. And then, you know, I just, you know, see ya, and left the farm to go do something one day. And a week later, he died. I never got a chance to tell my mom. So I'm not going to have that ever happen again.
I hear you. And that's a very important lesson on its own. But it takes a while to learn someone's language.
So you can be stupid, blatant like me and just, you know, say, you know, how do you learn? Or, you know, say, you know what? I don't know. What's your love language so I can, you know, show I appreciate you in the right way? And most people will say, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And then you talk about it with them. And a lot of people don't realize that they have a particular way. Now, I've gotten pretty good about figuring out people over time. And so when I was talking with this one person, I'm like, so, you know, you do this and you have this and you've got this in your background. And so it looks like this is what's going on. And he was like, oh, wow, you're absolutely right. I never thought about that. So when you're explaining this, having a discussion, not being judgmental, but saying, this is what I see, this is what I think and feel about this, my understanding, it allows them to then grow and understand themselves. And so they can then operate from a higher level because they now have this knowledge, not just of themselves, but how they interact with others. Because then this person came back to me and was like, you know, so I realized that my one client, this is their particular language. And so I show that I care for them in this way. And it's helped my business relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And people, this is a very important point. The platinum rule is something that I've followed my entire career since I realized the mistake that I was making. But what Joe said is spot on. Again, rewind, re-listen, learn. All right, Joe, let's move to lesson number 10. Well, now it seems like it's something that, you know, my dad would say, but okay, lesson number 10, have fun, don't die.
Another thing from my mom, the nut. So growing up out in the country, you know, summer vacation, you know, we didn't have all these scheduled things. We had swim lessons in the morning, a couple of days a week. But other than that, we were on our own. We were feral almost. It's not like she threw like Cheerios on the floor and did full free range parenting, but it was close to that in a lot of ways. She'd kick us out in the morning. She's like, yo, there's the bathroom. You know where it is. And the garden hose is outside because, you know, that's what we drank from. And she's like, I don't want to see you till lunch. Have fun. Don't die. Okay. And so those were great directions. And so she used to tell my kids this. My ex-wife actually hates this because they're like overprotected. It needs to be scheduled. You need to have all this. Yeah. And, you know, you can't go outside the rules. And, you know, it's all about how you others perceive you. And, you know, it's very much fitting into proper society where my family, it's like, no, you know, you push the rules. You figure stuff out. Growing up on a farm, you had to figure out how things worked and how to make things be effective with constraints. And there was always more stuff to be done. And so we didn't have the computer games. We did not have all the expensive stuff. We did not have all the scheduled activities with others. It was like, okay, go outside. What do we have to play with today? All right, let's figure it out. So you learn to make your own fun. And the full saying that we tell each other is, I love you, have fun, don't die.
Yeah.
And so like the first time my four-year-old said that to me at school when I dropped him off at pre-K, the looks I got from the parents and from like the staff, they're like, what? It's like, yeah, love you, have fun, don't die. And so have fun, engage, grow, learn, interact, do all that stuff. And if you're not dead, guess what? It's a learning lesson. If it's not fatal, it's not final. So, okay, you screwed up that business deal. Is it the end of the world? Going back to Ken Jeong, but did you die? Okay, get back on up. Figure out another way. So
absolutely. Love you,
have fun, don't die.
Absolutely love that. That's brilliant. All right, well, they're your 10 lessons, Joe, and they were fantastic. Let me ask you now, with all of your experience, what have you unlearned?
So being the former gifted kid.
Right.
Right. So like being the gifted kid, I started college at 13 because my parents said 12 was too young to start college, just so that your listeners know that. Okay. When I was 10, you know, I tested with like an IQ that was completely and totally off the charts. My mom didn't tell me what the IQ was until much later. When I was 8, I said I wanted to learn everything there was to know. My mom's like, there's an encyclopedia, get reading. So I did. I read it all. But so when you're growing up in that sort of environment, that really high standard academics, and there are a lot of ways they expect perfection. And so I had to learn over time, you're never going to have perfection. The martial arts was great for this because you're chasing perfection, but you learn that you're never going to have it, but you can still get better. And so I had to unlearn about perfection. I had to realize sometimes good enough is good enough. I had to learn about, you know, MVP, minimal viable product, ship it out and you can improve it and you can improve it and you can improve it. And sometimes you reach a point of diminishing returns. And sometimes you step say, you know what? No, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to be good at that thing. I don't have to do this. You know what? I screwed up something in my career. So be it. And so being able to accept not having a perfect score on everything. Because guess what? In life, you're not going to get a perfect score. To understand the messiness and the diversions and the nonlinear components necessary for success, especially if you're taking a non-traditional career path like building a business or being a writer or being a podcast host like you. Okay, it's not a linear thing. It's not A, then B, then C. It is multivariable. There's all these different things. And you know what? It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be pretty all the time, but you know what? It's functional and it's good enough.
That is a wonderful lesson to unlearn. And it's something that's taken a lot of people a long time to learn. Some of them still don't learn it. They need to be perfect. Perfection is the enemy of advancement, of innovation. You don't need to be perfect. Good enough is good enough, as Joe says. That's fantastic. So Joe, tell us, where can we find you? What are you doing? What do you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, hopefully you can find me in the pub. So people can find me on lots of different channels. My YouTube and my Twitter are both at EDE with Joe. That's at EDE for Everyday Excellence with Joe. So they can track me there. There's lots of free stuff. Every single day I post to both those. There's a lot of really cool things there. If they go to my website, everyday-excellence.com, that's everyday-excellence.com. I've got more free resources there. I put the podcast up, so they'll find this and a whole bunch of other ones. They can also find my training and my books and all that there. But what I really want them to do is when they go there, sign up for my free app, really free, no cost at all, other than a little bit of your time to do it. 3-day, three brain training. So every day for 3 days, you're going to get an email. We explore how the triangle brain works so you can understand why you do stupid things or why you want to go to the pub instead of do your homework or do your work, various things like that. So it allows you to have a better understanding of yourself and other people so that you can make better decisions and reach goals.
Fantastic. And all those links will be in the show notes. So people can just have a look at the transcript and the show notes and just click the link. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you. And we'll finish here today. You've been listening to 10 Lessons Learned. Our guest today has been Joe Templin sharing his 10 Lessons Learned. This episode is supported, as always, by the Professional Development Forum. Please tell us what you think of today's lessons. You can even email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. And while you're at it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and turn on your notification bell so you don't miss the only show on the internet that makes the world wiser, lesson by lesson. Thank you for listening, and we love you. Have fun. Don't die.